Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I can't draw, paint, sketch, sculpt to save my life. But I'm in awe of those who can express themselves through art, whatever the medium. And I'm so grateful for the beauty, creativity, originality they bring to the world. My guest today says drawing has been the singular focus of her artistic career. Sky Pape is a contemporary abstract artist known for her unconventional approach to traditional materials like ink, graphite, and handmade paper. She says she's intrigued by the possibilities of challenging the artistic conventions of those familiar materials. Sky's methods include drawing mist, ice, rain, and palm fronds, which she says allows the material themselves to convey something of nature's complex energy. In Sky's own words, her goal is to contribute to the growing vocabulary of this fundamental visual language while strengthening the appreciation of drawing as a significant artistic discipline in its own right. Born in Canada, Sky attended Queen's University before moving to New York City, where she studied at Parsons School of Design and the Arts Students League of New York. Her work can be found in the Museum of Modern Art, the Guggenheim, the Brooklyn Museum, as well as numerous corporate and private collections. Selected by Art and Embassies program run by our State Department, her work has been exhibited widely in the U.S. and abroad. Sky's awards and honors include residency fellowships in Italy through the Rockefeller and the Bogliasco Foundations. Did I say that right?
Bogliasco.
I didn't say that right, but I'm leaving that in. Sky, welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Sandy. I'm happy to be here.
Jonathan Goodman, in a critique of your work, wrote, "Sky Pape's drawings extend the idea of drawing." What does that mean?
I think people often think about drawing as marks on a surface or on a passive surface, and the way I work, the paper itself becomes a very active material and a very active part of the way I think of drawing. So I think that that is a little unusual in itself.
Describe the relationship between the drawing and the paper.
I've used paper where I'm tearing it up and reconfiguring it. I use paper where I'm working on both sides of the paper, where the ink will bleed through to the other side and I'll flip it over and the back becomes the front.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's oftentimes it can be in some ways a two-sided drawing. So the way the paper absorbs the materials or reacts to the materials is really important in it, or the qualities of the paper fibers are very important. So the physical aspects of the paper itself are as important as the physical aspects of the ink or the graphite or the other materials.
And how did you come to know that?
I got some familiarity with handmade papers when I was learning about Japanese papers and their uses in art conservation and preservation and presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And in those applications, you take the Japanese paper and you tear it, and when you're tearing it, you start to see these incredible fibers and how that works. And that made a very big impression on me, that these papers that seem so fragile are actually quite strong, and they're made. There's sort of a remarkable thing about the way they're made. And I didn't really start using them as an art material until later, but that was the
genesis.
Exactly.
And is that where you feel the most comfortable?
I used to work with canvas and with paint for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I switched over to working with paper, it became a real love affair. And I just related so strongly to it.
And it wasn't necessarily something conscious. It was just an evolution?
It was an evolution. I started working with drawing and paper because of certain circumstances in my life at the time. And then that just seemed to be very, very suitable for the expression I was doing.
And very comfortable. For you?
Well, it's challenging.
Ah. But explain that to me. Why would circumstances in one's life lead to another form of art?
Well, there were a couple of things. Painting has certain demands, mm-hmm. and I wasn't able to do oil painting. I had to travel a lot, and it was a time of great stress and upheaval. And oil painting canvas was not portable in the same way. You have to wait for that to dry. There's just not that kind of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the paper was a much more immediate way of continuing to have some sort of creative outlet, mm-hmm. outlet and work. And it just took off from there.
Is that more satisfying?
I wouldn't say more satisfying. It's a very different process because some of the types of drawings that I've done are very time consuming and take a long time to build up over time. Others are more immediate, but I may have to sacrifice more where the piece works or it doesn't work. And so you have to destroy it and move on. So it's just a very different process. I mean, painting was very satisfying in other ways. With the drawing, there's less of an opportunity to rework things. So
it is what it is.
Yeah.
How does one become an artist? And did you know that you had a special talent in creativity?
I had a desire. I always had a proclivity to be drawing and making things with my hands. I think there's a struggle. It's a very difficult career path if you
if you want to earn a living.
So it helps to have a very modest lifestyle because the income is not necessarily reliable. But I think it's a dedication of practice more than anything, that it's a desire to find something out. Mm-hmm. It's a searching thing. And that to me was really gratifying.
But it's also something you can't control, I would imagine, that it's inside of you that you must do this. You must express yourself.
It's very much a drive like that, yeah. And whether that means you pursue a career in art or not is another question. I had those debates with myself of do I pursue another career and then do this on the side. I kept finding myself sort of weighing that with different things. Oh, you know, I'll be an architect, which is sort of
arty.
It has a creative thing and involves science, which I love, and I'll do art on the side. And I thought, oh, well, no, maybe I'll be a set designer, which is more, visually, well, not necessarily more, but
yes,
more in terms of a painterly sense maybe, or has other expressive
mm-hmm.
possibilities, and I'll do art on the side.
Right.
And then I realized, well, no, I just I'm never going to be happy unless I really try and pursue this, which of course ended up meaning years where I always worked full time on my artwork and
uh-huh.
then essentially would have another part time or full time job at the same time. So it does mean like working 60, 80 hours a week for a long time. But now finally I'm at a point where
you made it. I'll say it. You don't have to say it. Did you know there was a talent at a young age?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it always was. I wouldn't say that I was encouraged along in that regard, but I don't know that I was actively discouraged either. I think that people recognize that this is a very difficult path to follow.
Just to personalize this, as I was writing about you and thinking about you, when I was in school and it was time for art class, it was torture for me. And to be judged on it or graded on something that I just had no talent for was awful, where that was just much more of a natural act for you.
Yes, it
was. Can you sort of appreciate my position in
a sense? I certainly can. I think people feel that way about math or about spelling.
I feel that way about math, too.
Or about any of those things. I always loved it. I was busy making my own toys. I was busy making puppets out of socks and busy, any scrap always seemed to have great potential.
So it was a no-brainer for you to pursue this when you went on to school.
Like I said, I struggled with what to pursue in university until I finally made the decision. By the time I got to university,
mm-hmm.
I had made that decision. I was exposed to a lot of art through my paternal grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that eased the way for me in some ways.
Typical art? Because your art is different.
Typical modern art, mm-hmm. Hans Hoffmann, Picasso, mm-hmm. Man mm-hmm. Ray,
right.
the highest levels of
right.
contemporary art of the time
right.
Were part of my vocabulary already.
And that art spoke to you?
Yes, very much, very much. My grandmother was also a painter, and so I grew up looking at a lot of things and having an open mind about what I was looking at.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Skye Pape, a contemporary abstract artist known for her unconventional approach to traditional materials like ink, graphite, and handmade paper. In an interview that you did with Artfile magazine, you said that art is a pretty suitable profession for an introvert.
Yes. Being an introvert is a funny thing.
Okay.
In that I think it doesn't mean I don't enjoy social interaction or that I don't need it. It's just that that requires a lot of energy for me and refueling, whereas I'm very content to be alone. I don't find that lonely.
But you're also doing wonderful things when you're by yourself.
It's very gratifying. It's challenging and it's gratifying. It's a struggle.
It's really hard.
It's difficult, challenging your vision. There's a lot of self-criticism.
And I was going to say self-doubt.
You think it's going to get easier and it never gets easier. You just set the bar higher. Yeah.
Was there a mentor for you when you were at Queen's University?
Not at Queen's at all. I was eager to come to New York and was just trying to find a way to come to New York. And then when I had the opportunity to come here, I was very glad. But at Parsons, there was somebody who there was a painter named Regina Grant, who passed away recently, who was a very brilliant woman. And I found her to be very encouraging in some ways. She was extremely thoughtful and tough.
And spoke to you?
Yeah.
Take us on that journey from Canada to New York City. How old were you when you came here?
I was 18. I graduated high school early. I went to university early.
How many years did you spend at university?
I was at Queens for 1 year before I came down to New York.
And then you said, I'm done.
I would have come immediately, but couldn't at the time.
Without putting words in your mouth, was Queens a waste of your time?
I think you get something out of every experience, so I don't—
Oh, you're such a diplomat.
I'm trying to be diplomatic. I met some wonderful people there. I think that school is an unbelievably wonderful university, but at the time, I think it's really great. It was really great for things like engineering and other things, and the art program was not a top priority, so it wasn't necessarily the best.
So you knew you had to move on.
Well, I already recognized that New York was really the place that I wanted to go, and it was a matter of finding a way to afford to—
I was just going to say, did you come here without a pot to piss in?
Pretty much, yeah.
And what year was that?
That was 1982.
Did you go to Parsons right away?
I had taken the SATs before I went to Queens and ended up being sort of scouted out by Parsons and solicited by them. I had looked at NYU and couldn't go there. They weren't offering scholarships and the financial aid that would help me at the time. And it was I looked at other schools and was very interested in Parsons. Parsons sent me an invitation, essentially, to come down for an interview.
Oh,
I came down for the interview, was accepted, and then just said,
"So there you
I'm
go."
Coming.
Oh, for sure. How many years were you there?
I was there also for a year.
And then right after Parsons, it was Art Students League.
Yeah, Art Students League was actually a fantastic experience. It was a really great opportunity for me there to connect with other artists who were involved in different disciplines and a really global community, a broad demographic in terms of age range and nationalities and everything. And that was a kind of environment where I felt really good.
And we're thriving?
Yeah. I felt like for me to just stick within your own demographic is a little limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was all this other input, and it was exciting.
And at that time, what were your tools? Were you painting then? Were you drawing then?
I was primarily involved with painting and printmaking at the time. I was always drawing as a part of my painting practice, but I was primarily involved with painting and print. I was also in a band that grew out of that as well. So,
and then How long before you got your own studio and then you started to be represented by a gallery? Was it a really tough process or did it go relatively smoothly when you look back?
I started doing group shows and different things around that time in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. different group exhibitions internationally and domestically. Not necessarily with one gallery, but I would say yes to any appropriate opportunity
sure.
that came along.
Uh-huh.
And work with different galleries. I always had some sort of studio space to work in, whether that was part of my living space that was devoted to that or a separate studio space. And as far as galleries, then I really started doing some legwork to see which galleries were showing work that I related to.
Of course.
That I liked the whole vision of the gallery and sort of narrowed that down to see where I might fit and where I might have something to offer the gallery, because it's really a symbiotic relationship.
Of course.
I think a lot of people go out and just walk cold into a gallery and expect them to show their work without any sense of the gallery dealer's perspective, which is, that business is their baby the same way
your
my
art
is mine.
Exactly.
And, you're really working together, and it's a relationship where you have to have mutual respect.
Explain the residency fellowship process. You apply to study abroad?
It's not study per se. The residency fellowships that I dealt with, the Rockefeller Foundation at Bellagio Center and Bugliasco Foundation, Liguria Center for the Arts and Humanities, those are environments, generally very beautiful environments,
I'm sure,
where you can have a very focused period of time to work on what you have proposed to work on. So it's a very self-directed thing. It's an application process, so you're vetted through different layers of some sort of usually a peer review,
mm-hmm.
and different layers through the administration of the foundation. If they grant the residency fellowship, those things tend to be between 1 to 3 months. Some are longer, some are shorter. Some are just for artists. Some, like Rockefeller Foundation, put together people. I was a visual artist in residence. They're composers, academics, scholars, scientists.
Wow.
It was a small group of people, an international coterie of like 9 or 10.
Who were all there together.
Who are all there together, but they're each working on their
project. Right, but who interact with each other.
Yeah, so
that must
the
have been really cool.
Part, yeah.
And that was for several months.
The Bellagio one is for 1 month.
Did they seem to come one right after the other? I mean, how does that work?
It works on when you apply and when you get when you
so you're kind of at their mercy.
When you get accepted, when you apply, you have an option to say, "This is my ideal window of time."
Mm-hmm.
Like they give you windows, and you say, "This is my choice 1, 2, or 3." And if it works out, they will slot you accordingly.
And so everything is paid for the time that you are.
In those particular residencies, it's a fully funded
That's
fellowship,
wonderful.
And they provide you meals. They by providing you meals and the place to sleep and the studio space and all of these things,
all
they,
of that,
they really
the
let
mundane.
You shed all of those.
Exactly, and you're free to create.
Yeah.
Can one apply for a residency even now in your career?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's
there are residency fellowships that are for all different levels of careers, of one's creative career,
mm-hmm.
or other careers as well. But I'm speaking to creative careers because that's what I know.
Of course.
There are sites online, I think it's called Res Artists or Trans Artists, that you can put in information into a search engine saying, I'm a writer and I want to go to Istanbul or something. And what residencies are there or in India or wherever? And it'll come up and tell you what opportunities there are,
mm-hmm.
and the details about these different residencies. Some of them are fully funded. Some of them you pay a small amount. Some of them offer you a stipend on top of it. It's all different depending.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is contemporary artist Skye Pape. What was it like when you you know, got your first acceptance at MoMA or at the Guggenheim, were you over the moon?
Well, yes and no. I mean, when you have something like that, you're really kind of – it doesn't mean your work is on display there all the time.
I understand.
You might be –
Am I giving too much weight to this?
No, I think it's a great honor.
And well-deserved.
Well, thank you.
I mean, those institutions don't suffer artists gladly.
When I got that news, it had happened at a time my studio and my living space had just been destroyed by fire, and I lost about 15 years of my work at the time. And
oh my God.
I was so concerned about that. I didn't have a place to live, and I was, and then I got this news, which was very uplifting, but at the same time,
what a contrast.
I was not really totally focused on that when it happened.
But it happened. Was it really validating for you?
Yeah. The recognition is, it's wonderful and encouraging to have recognition along the way. But I think it's so different from the creative process that when you're in the studio and you're the things that you're concerned about on a day-to-day basis, it's a different...
Are you in the studio every day?
I am not in the studio every single day, but I try to get in there pretty much. Or I do things that advance my work every single day.
Meaning what?
Meaning whether that's reading, writing, whether that's administrative tasks involved with my work, applications, grant applications, residency applications, going to see stuff. But the primary focus of what I do is being in the studio.
And you work alone as opposed to having anybody on a staff of yours? It's just you doing everything?
It's me doing everything.
And are there days when you walk into the studio and say, I just can't, or I don't feel anything?
No. I mean, there are days when I walk in and I'm often prepared that everything I do that day is going to be terrible. And that's always a possibility, but that's the discipline, that's the practice. You go and you that's just part of it. And
that never leaves, regardless of how long one's been creating.
No, because you're always going to make mistakes. And if you're not making mistakes, you're not really stretching yourself.
What's a mistake? How would I know you're making a mistake?
You probably won't get to see my mistakes, and that's...
Can you describe a mistake?
A mistake is when I make a mark that doesn't, you know, I'll destroy a drawing because I'm making marks on that don't work, that it ends up being a mess. It's just a disaster and needs to be thrown away. So those things have to happen. Or a mistake, not really a mistake, but I'll try some new technique or I'll experiment with something and the results don't produce anything that I can really use. So that's sort of a mistake, but it's not really a mistake.
I understand.
It's gathering information. So those sort of things, this year I'll go in and I'm like, well, everything I did today didn't work.
Where I might walk into your studio and something would speak to me that maybe didn't speak to you?
Well, that happens, but that's because it's impossible for me to be really objective about my
own work.
Well,
that was basically my point, meaning that it's always with us, you know, that there's still, oh, I'm not sure, this isn't working, or I don't know, or is this any good? Does that not make you crazy?
Yes, it sort of makes you crazy that it doesn't get easier in that regard.
Well, that's my
point.
But
I think there's some level of confidence that when you've been doing something as long as I have or as long as you have, that there's a comfort that I'm not going to stop doing this tomorrow.
Of course not.
So that's reassuring. But I think there's something valuable in that kind of self-questioning of, is this good enough? Because you don't want to accept something from yourself. You don't want to be in danger of accepting something from yourself that's mediocre.
And what happens to you when you are very proud of a piece of work that you've done and the reaction isn't the same from the outside?
It's frustrating. It stings sometimes. But I think the value of having persevered through this sort of thing for as long as I have is that I've developed a real kind of rhino hide to most of that. So there are still things that get through and I just like can't believe and feel devastated for it. But I try and I'm able to pick myself up more quickly.
I wonder if that's female connected in any way or more pronounced because we're women.
I think there's a sensitivity that might be greater, and I think that men maybe go through life in general being more validated.
And with more self-assurance, maybe?
Yeah.
What are you working on now?
I am still working on work that involves water very significantly.
Why does water play such a big role?
Water is fascinating to me. It's a mysterious substance,
mm-hmm.
for one, that is one of the most important elements in
our lives,
our existence.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's still not fully understood. And I think water, this doesn't play out so much in my work, but it fascinates me just on a broader level. And then I think water is really going to be one of the great battlegrounds going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that I want to get on a soapbox, well, maybe I do, about climate and environment.
That ecological.
Are all issues that
mm-hmm.
are very near and dear to my heart. And I think, well, we're talking maybe a little bit about fossil fuels and energy. Really, water is one of the things that clearly we need to be focusing on because it's a huge problem. And
so how does water figure into your work?
I use water as a primary material in my work, the same way I use paper and ink, and the water is really active in the
mm-hmm.
work. And so I use water in different forms. Lately, I'm using pretty much regular water, but I use rain.
Mm-hmm.
I'll work outside in the rain. I use mist. I use snow. I use ice. I use water in different forms.
Wow.
And so it's really become quite fascinating to me to see how the water has a way of describing itself, where I'm not just making work that intentionally I set out to make it look watery,
mm-hmm.
but water itself has a way of looking like water.
And when you work outside in the rain and near water, is it always in the same place or do you travel to do that?
No, Italian rain.
It's
very lovely.
Uh-huh.
And is different than, it looks a little different than rain that I've been in here
mm-hmm.
domestically.
Sure.
And I think our lakes, if I put a piece in the lakes, it's different here than if I, a lake up in the Adirondacks is
mm-hmm.
different than Lago di Como in,
mm-hmm. in Italy.
Yeah, it would be wonderful if I could travel more and
mm-hmm.
and suss out how the water is different in all these different parts of the world.
Anything else with the elements?
No, what I'm really working with is primarily water and ink and paper still right now.
Do you want to try something new?
I always try new things, whether they get developed into a full body of work that might be exhibited in a gallery
mm-hmm.
or not is something different. But as an artist, I feel it's important to always go off on these different little tangents because I think they inform the work in unexpected ways,
mm-hmm.
even if it doesn't turn into a big giant thing.
There's openness, right?
There's little snippets, and I think experimenting with different materials and stuff, it adds to one's arsenal of tools, as you might say.
Mm-hmm. And is there any place that you would like to go to?
I have a long wish list
of places to go,
but the top two, I'd say, on my list right now are Madagascar and India.
Oh, wow. Wow. And do you see yourself getting there anytime soon?
I'm working on it.
All right. Well, I'll write you a ticket. Hey, Sky. The sky's the limit. Sounds like you've just got a really nice thing going there. The talent, the creativity, the joy. It sounds like you're at a good place.
Well, thank you very much.
You're happy to be where you are?
I am very happy to be where I am. Happy to be here.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure, Sandy.
Join us for another edition of The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.